And as previously billed, let's bring in the senior White House correspondent for the New York Times, nytimes.com, Peter Baker, on the never-ending odyssey of Washington, the partial government shutdown, battle over the wall, all sides entrenched, and of course, just to show you how things can change hour by hour politically and every other way, the U.S. Supreme Court delivered a victory for the president and a blow to transgender rights with a ruling on the Pentagon to start enforcing the Trump administration's order to limit transgender military service. So, let's go live to Peter. Welcome, Peter. What's on your menu today?
Oh, so many things, of course, but, still front and center is this government shutdown, day 32. We're now more than a month in, which is pretty extraordinary. Nothing like it that we've ever seen in American history. The Senate's going to push forward with President Trump's proposed compromise that he mentioned over the weekend. This is where he would trade at least temporary protection for some younger illegal immigrants who were brought into the country when they were young in favor of his money for the wall. But that's got an immediate no-go from the Democrats who are standing firm. So we're still in a stalemate.
Peter, conventional wisdom, I believe, has held that the Democrats have the upper hand. But to the extent that many Republicans are not exactly enamored with government generally and actually prefer a trim government, do the Democrats have the upper hand since they value government more than many Republicans?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, you're right that if you're going to overgeneralize, but that's true. Democrats obviously are more committed to the idea of government as an active force in society, and Republicans are more committed to the idea that it should be lean and mean. The problem here is that you're not actually trimming government by closing parts of it for a month. All you're doing is actually getting less work done, because ultimately the federal workers will still have to be paid. All the money that they're not getting now, they will eventually be paid. The government just won't get the work that they would have done for it, which means that therefore the government will actually have to spend more money, not less, to accomplish the things that it was supposed to accomplish but isn't doing it while these workers are staying at home.
I'm wondering whether we see the first evidence of a little bit of a pushback on the conservative commentariat, Ann Coulter, and, well, certainly Mark Meadows' Congress Freedom Caucus, when you had former governor of Arkansas, father of the press secretary, come out and chastise Ann Coulter.
Yeah, I think that there's a frustration in President Trump's circles that he has allowed just a handful of people to drive his policy here. He wasn't planning to have this shutdown. He wasn't planning to have a complete impasse over the wall money. He was ready to sign bills that would have kept the government open for at least a temporary amount of time while they negotiated. And then he got kind of pushed into it by Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh and so forth. So you're right. I think that there's some frustration. And the compromise he put out over the weekend, while not accepted by the Democrats, is a move away from that hard-line position that the Ann Coulters want him to take. In fact, he got excoriated by the political right for even suggesting this temporary protection for some of these immigrants, who they're calling it amnesty and a cave-in on his part.
But can you see a scenario where the Democrats start getting more of the blame?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I mean, right now the polls show more people blame President Trump than blame the Democrats. But there is this sort of pox on all their house view out there. They look at Washington and say, well, how is it that they can go a whole month and they can't even just keep the doors open? Remember, the money they're arguing about, $5.7 billion, is a pittance in the larger scheme of things. But it is now become sort of a moral issue. Remember, Nancy Pelosi said that it's immoral to have the wall. President Trump is saying, in effect, it's immoral not to have it. So, Democrats could at some point find themselves to blame, but for the moment, they seem to be standing firm, just as the president is.
And I'm almost hesitant to ask you, how do you think this ends? Because how does anybody know?
We should learn not to make predictions in Washington, that's for sure. I thought at one point this national emergency idea that the president had, he was going to declare a national emergency, and then he could shift some money over on his own authority without Congress while reopening the government. I thought that might be a way out for him. But that got pushed back from conservatives who said, wait a second, we complained about President Obama overreaching with executive authority. That doesn't mean we should do it just because we're now in charge, and it would be a bad precedent for the next president.
Yeah, as soon as you think there's a light at the end of the tunnel, there isn't. I don't know whether you saw this story, but I have to ask you about it. It's fascinating to me. Senator Joni Ernst, Republican Iowa, says she turned down the chance to be Donald Trump's vice president, and it comes up in divorce papers?
Oh, no, I had not seen that. Oh. No, you're telling me something I didn't know. That's really interesting.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. I mean, we knew she would have been a good choice for him in some ways because, she's an up-and-comer in the party. She would have diversified his ticket. She's, I think, a military veteran and well-liked on the right. But that's interesting news.
Well, she says her husband, quote, hated any successes I have. Apparently very difficult domestic situation, but I found that fascinating, kind of out of left field. Finally, something I know you have more than enough to say about, and that's the presidential race now with Kamala Harris in.
Yeah, we're now, like, I think, 4 or 5 declared candidates in. Democratic field is beginning to shape up, but I think we've got quite a number of more candidates still to come. What you don't see right now is a very clear, you know, situation in terms of who's out front. I mean, Joe Biden obviously has the best poll numbers if he decides to get in, sitting former vice president, but he, you know, it's partly out of name ID. They all, you know, many people know him. We don't really know how this is going to shake out. You get a lot of people sort of throwing their hats in the ring, deciding to give it a chance and debut on the public stage. Kamala Harris is the latest.
Well, you mentioned Biden. Week after week goes, and we don't hear.
He doesn't feel like he has to rush into it the way others do, right? Because he is, in fact, somebody who can put together an organization and, you know, raise money at any point he jumps in. These other ones are newcomers to the national scene and have to sort of build up some credibility. So he has a little bit of more time, or at least they think he does, to make his decision. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some answers in the next month or so.
And final thing, were you at all surprised, Vice President Pence and the MLK remarks yesterday?
Well, you know, I mean, essentially they have to walk a line on this, obviously. You know, Martin Luther King is a revered figure, and, you know, we've got a situation where the president, who has been racially provocative in a way that seems antithetical to, you know, people who admire Dr. King. So Mike Pence and all these other ones, and they have to address this, have a careful challenge in front of them.
It was just a rare time where Pence was out front of the news. So, all right, yeah. Sir. Thank you so much, Peter, getting back to us after your TV bip. Thanks so much.
Okay, good talking to you.
Good talking to you, sir. Peter Baker, senior White House correspondent, New York Times, NYTimes.com, live here on Delaware.